Our next presenter is Dr. Betsy Eastwood from the City University of New York, and she is the evaluator at our State University of New York SUNY Downstate Medical Center Demonstration Project.
Hi, everybody. You're the last people standing. It's great to see you here. I actually am going to be addressing a couple of the questions that were asked here about risk factors. And what I looked at is the characteristics of women in urban and rural sites, and I'll be doing a simple comparison of those women. I have no relationships to disclose in APHA land. 10 sites around the U.S. were funded, and these are the locations: Brooklyn, Miami, Chicago, L.A., San Antonio, and Springfield, Massachusetts. The rural sites were Alabama, North Carolina, Texas, and New Jersey. The New Jersey data are not included for this presentation. And I want to give a special thanks to Jessica Xavier, who's been our project officer and has done a fantastic job over the last 4.5 years. Thank you, Jessica. Okay, so the overall initiative addresses barriers to care on entry, returning, and remaining in HIV care. A comparison of urban and rural sites regarding barriers to care and concerns about current health care, personal circumstances such as living situation and risk factor, and in the larger scheme of things, reproducibility of service models for other interventions in the future. So this is the most recent CDC slide that shows the difference in the female population in the United States and diagnoses of HIV infection in pink on the left. So you see it disproportionately affects women of color. Okay, in the long run, what we expect is improved rates of consistent medical care for at least 18 months, medical visits being defined as at least every 6 months, improved or stable clinical conditions, T cell counts, improved and undetectable viral load, improved self-assessed health, and problems resolved with respect to barriers to medical care, and Nico began addressing some of those issues. Okay, so in this presentation, I'm going to describe the final baseline sample of women of color who were enrolled between October 2010 and July 2013, and it addresses an early question that HRSA had about the differences in barriers to care among women who come from urban areas compared to rural areas. In particular, there was an interest in the kind of barriers to care, barriers to getting access to medical care, and also risks. So in this presentation, I'm going to be talking about, I'll skip over some of the sociodemographic characteristics because Bert has presented those, but I'll talk more about barriers to care and also risk behavior. Okay, this is a prospective study, 5 categories of women. Bird talked about those, from newly diagnosed to lost to care. Okay, Bird also presented these data. There are more women who transferred to care in urban sites and more women in sporadic care in rural sites. And we think that one of the reasons there are more women who transfer to care in urban sites is just that there are a lot of HIV providers. So I'm unhappy with this clinic this week, and so I'm going to go to somebody else when I'm symptomatic in the future. Okay, again, age categories similar, also presented ethnicity, primary language being predominantly English, but Spanish in some urban sites, and most women born in the United States. Also, there's a difference in urban and rural sites in terms of education, and the kind of punchline of this whole presentation is that urban women in many ways are more disenfranchised than rural women, and we would have expected kind of the opposite. And it gets back to, you know, old Durkheimian notions of anomie and you know, being lost in urban centers. Again, I think surprising to us was the proportion of women in both urban and rural sites, although it's greater in urban sites, of women who are single. Also of note is that women in urban areas are more likely to be institutionalized, and those are primarily jail and treatment centers for substance abuse, and also a much higher proportion of women who live on the street or in SROs. Women in urban sites are more likely to live alone. Okay. With regard to health insurance, women in rural areas are more likely to have some kind of private health insurance. There's a high proportion among the whole sample that does not have health insurance at the time of enrollment. Again, as Bird presented, there are not many people, very many women who are working, only about 18% of the sample. More women in rural areas are able to get on disability, and there are more women in urban areas who are both, I know from looking at other data, both not working and also not looking for work, and part of that is because of loss of generous benefits in some of the states that are studied. So like California has relatively generous benefits, New York has relatively generous benefits, and it's a disincentive to have an income because you then lose the benefits when you hit a certain threshold for different types of subsidies. And again, rural women were more likely to report some working, and urban women more likely to report income from public sources. Okay, so here's where our presentations are really different. We took a look at a set of 30 barriers that were developed especially for this study based on work that the sites had done beforehand and our evaluation center at Albert Einstein College of Medicine. And so the highest five most reported barriers are also ones that Nico talked about in her presentation on dynamics of care. Except for need more information, they're all different across, significantly different across urban and rural sites. Both urban and rural women say, we need more information about HIV care. But the women in urban sites say, no, I need to get more on track on my own. I can take care of this on my own. Women in rural sites are more likely to say that they feel they might be judged, that they also feel embarrassed or uncomfortable. And that may be because some of the providers in rural sites are the only providers, and so when a woman goes into that setting, everybody knows that it's the place where people get HIV care. Now, the lowest barriers, no one to watch children, have all reported, no one speaks your language, thought your kids would be taken away, reported to police for drugs, and thought would be deported. I have to say, we researchers thought these were really important at the outset of the study, and we were wrong. So it all goes to show you that we think we know what's going on with our clinical populations, but we may not actually. But these barriers, getting back on track on your own, thought maybe drudge, you'd learn to live with it, felt embarrassed, all of those are kind of disempowered, feeling uncomfortable, not sure where to go, and are important for providers because it indicates a level of stigma either internalized or coming from providers. So, okay, and we also looked at risk behaviors, and these are all the risks. Now, there were no differences between the urban and rural sites, but I put these up just to show you and then to talk about the relative frequency of reporting versus lack of frequency. So unprotected sex is the most reported HIV risk behavior. Second to having drank alcohol, and third to using cocaine. And another set of questions that we asked was the women's experience with battering, the WEB from the CDC. 15% of women report either current or past domestic violence. But there's a somewhat disconnect between what women report as risks and what may be actual risks. So injecting drug use, we know, for example, in Brooklyn that we have a high incidence of women who inject drugs, and there's some maybe a social desirability factor and an underreporting of these risks. Okay, so the last question we asked is, how do risk factors interact with barriers? And what we did is we took the most important, we felt, risk factors and compared them to the five most frequently occurring barriers. So alcohol use, unprotected sex, and we also thought that low education plays a role in how women will seek help and report barriers. And with the exception of the barrier need to live with it, which was associated with complex alcohol use patterns, there were no differences between women. This is the urban and rural sites combined together now, and their barriers to care. So we're not finding, at least in this first pass through the data, that risk behavior is associated with barriers. We'll be taking a closer look in the future. And by the way, we just special shout out and thanks to Einstein, because the final baseline survey was just available to us, the data, in the last 3 weeks, and they were super about getting data to us all for analysis. Okay, so what can we conclude? Urban sites women are generally more disenfranchised. They have lower levels of education, more unstable housing, more unemployment levels, and larger Latina populations. Urban women report more barriers and at higher levels than rural women, except for feelings of judgment. And when we looked at all 30 barriers, it's like urban women were screaming out, this barrier affects me, it affects me a lot, and it may be because of the stressors associated with living in urban areas or a higher expectation that those barriers will be met by providers. But again, these are something for future analysis. Sexual risk-taking is reported more frequently, but we think that some of the other, particularly substance use risks, may be underreported. Okay, in later assessments, so next year at APHA, we'll be able to discern whether women can be retained in HIV medical care, and we can look at their health outcomes. We've been able to do this locally at Brooklyn for a year's worth of data, and the good news is we're finding that women who stay in care tend to report better health. We'll find out if it carries across national sites. Also, we'll be looking at multivariate models to construct and to better understand the differences to help improve retention in care and make recommendations for the future. So thank you very much. Time for a question. Yes?
You said that the barriers you expected to be more prominent ended up being the least.
Yeah.
Did you stratify that analysis by those that did not speak English, for example, like the language barrier and the deportation barrier? Considering that your Latino population is much smaller than that.
Yeah. If women spoke Spanish as a primary language, the surveys were delivered to them in Spanish. Yeah.
Right.
So.
But I'm just saying the barrier that was.
Yeah.
One of the barriers was language barriers to care were language barriers and risk of deportation. So
right, and those were just.
Analysis was
on the whole population.
Was on the whole population, because obviously that would be low.
Yeah. That's something that we can take a look at in future analyses to parse out those differences, particularly in urban areas where there's a high Latina population. And two of the sites are in LA and Miami, and those are particularly important to take a look at.
And our final presentation, last but not least, Dr. Kristen Sullivan of Duke University, who's serving as the co-evaluator for our UNC site.